This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Linda Paston is here, and she's going to say hello with an opening poem.
This poem is called The New Dog. Into the gravity of my life, the serious ceremonies of polish and paper and pen, has come this manic animal whose innocent disruptions make nonsense of my old simplicities, as if I needed him to prove again that after all the careful planning, anything can happen.
And it does in this book. What is the name of this book and what's in this book, Linda Paston?
Well, I call it A Dog Runs Through It because although there's a dog in every poem, the poems aren't necessarily about dogs. There just happens to be a dog hidden away in a line.
That is true. And the most important thing about this book is that it is Linda Paston. The poetry is that poetry we know where, in this case, you use animals to connect to the heart. But your themes are Linda Paston themes. They are love, they are loss, death, life. The themes that you have in your work are the reason why you are one of the most beloved poets in America.
Thank you, Grace.
And let's have another poem.
This one is called Domestic Animals. The animals in this house have dream claws and teeth and shadow the rooms at night, their furled tails dangerous. In the morning, all sweet slobber, the dog may yawn, the cat may cat sounds deep in its furred throat. And who would guess how they wait for dark when into the green jungle of our sleep they insinuate themselves, releasing their terrible hunger. This is a poem I wrote for the poet Roland Flint, whose poetry I loved and whom I loved, and it's called River Mist for Roland Flint. When the kennel where my ridgeback died some 30 years ago wrote to ask for my business again, offering us one free night's board for every three nights paid, I looked at that name on the envelope, River Mist, imagining they were writing to say that Mowgli was somehow alive, the sword-like blade of fur still bristling on his back, that he had waited all these years for me to pick him up. And though I've had four dogs since, a small one at my feet right now, each running too swiftly through his life and mine, I could have wept thinking of rivers and mists, how in their wavering shadows they had figured and concealed the losses to come, mother and uncle, friends, and Roland now so newly dead, who on the flyleaf of an early book once wrote in his careful, redemptive hand, with love for Linda and Ira and for Mowgli.
In your introduction, which is a very important part of this book, it's a sweet essay, but it's a significant one too. The thing about this book is that each dog represents something about your ability to love and to be loved. And the loss of that dog and the loss of Roland make that poem unforgettable. Yes. Back to the book, A Dog Runs Through It, brand new, poems by Linda Paston, and each one has her imprimatur.
I'm going to read a poem that in some sense was also about Mowgli, although at that point in my life, I was embarrassed to write a poem about mourning about a dog, so I hid him in this poem. Although I say, it's called I Am Learning to Abandon the World for M. I am learning to abandon the world before it can abandon me. Already I have given up the moon and snow, closing my shades against the claims of white, and the world has taken my father, my friend. I have given up melodic lines of hills moving to a flat, tuneless landscape, and every night I give my body up, limb by limb, working upward across bone toward the heart. But morning comes with small reprieves of coffee and birdsong. A tree outside the window, which was simply shadow moments ago, takes back its branches, twig by leafy twig. And as I take my body back, the sun lays its warm muzzle on my lap as if to make amends. And there the sun's muzzle represents Magalie to me, as when I say my father, my friend, he was my friend.
Linda, this book is really one of your best, although I've read many of these poems before. Mm-hmm. What triggered the thought that you should just collect them all together?
Well, actually, I was about to have an 85th birthday, and all my children and grandchildren were coming to give me a party, and I wanted a gift for them. So my whole family loves dogs, so I went through my books and I put together dog poems, and I had an artist illustrate. The artist for that one, not this book, was Rhea Benarczyk. And then I gave a copy to each of my children and grandchildren, and I decided it might be fun to sell these books at readings, but I'd have to get permission from Norton, my publisher, since they had appeared in Norton Books. And when I asked Norton, they said, may we look at this book? And then they said, if you would add 10 more poems and write a preface, we would publish it as a book.
I didn't know that's how it happened. I did know Rhea as an artist. But tell us about the sketches in this book, drawings.
This is a new artist
that I
didn't know, that Norton found.
Oh.
I wanted to use Ray again. They wanted something a little more representational for these poems.
Do you love them?
I love them.
I do, too. I love these line drawings. She has living creatures on the page.
Right.
Yes. And there's something very significant about this. And it has to do with what we care for, what we nurture, what we rescue, what rescues us. These are not insignificant ideas that are in these poems. And today, of course, on the news, when you see children in cages, we wouldn't put a dog in a cage.
Right.
But our love for animals is like our love for children. Do you agree?
I absolutely do. The dogs are absolutely part of our families.
And yours especially will become part of history. A dog runs through it. I believe this is the book you should get to give to everyone, because it is genuine poetry, for sure. It's Linda Paston. I don't have to say more about that. It's also an interesting size book.
You can hold it in your hand.
You can put it in your pocket,
right,
in your pocketbook. But you can also give it to everyone you know who has a dog. And I'm going to buy one for each of my children who have dogs, even though I have cats. Linda's going to go on now.
This poem is In the Garden. I tell my dog to sit, and he sits, and I give him a biscuit. I tell him to come, and he comes and sits, and I give him a biscuit again. I tell my dog, lie down, and he sits, looking up at me with trust and adoration. I pause. I give him a biscuit. This is the beginning of love and disobedience. I was never meant to be a god.
This is who she is. She's from New York City originally, graduated from Radcliffe. And I just learned, in addition to having an advanced degree from Brandeis, she has a library science degree. She just stuck in there. She's had 15 volumes of poetry. Insomnia recently won the Towson University Literary Award. And two of her books have been finalists for the National Book Award. One for the Los Angeles Times Book Prize. And she has won many, many awards, including the Ruth Lilly Poetry Prize for Lifetime Achievement in 2003. Linda lives in Maryland now. She has 3 children and 7 grandchildren. And we're going to have another poem.
This one is The Animals. When I see a suckling pig turn on the spit, its mouth around an apple, or feel the soft muzzle of a horse eating a windfall from my hand. I think about the animals when Eden closed down, who stole no fruit themselves. After feeding so long from Adam's outstretched hand and sleeping under the mild stars flank to flank, what did they do on freezing nights? Still ignorant of nests and lairs, did they try to warm themselves on the fiery leaves of the first autumn? And how did they learn to sharpen fangs and claws? Who taught them the first lesson that flesh has been transformed to meat? Tiger and bear, elk and dove, God saved them places on the ark, and Christ would honor them with parables, calling himself the Lamb of God. We train our dogs in strict obedience, at which we failed ourselves. But sometimes the sound of barking fills the night like distant artillery, a sound as chilling as the bellow of steers led up the ramps of cattle cars whose gates swing shut on them, as Eden's did.
The voice of Linda Paston at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. It seems to me that to write poetry that smoothly, you had to overcome a lot of stuff. There had to be so much resistance that you had to move through and set aside and overcome, because no one can make those words so silky in such the right order without having come through resistance first. What is it that you do? What is the problem that you solve to get where you go and what you have?
It's very mysterious. I don't know where the metaphors, which are what interest me most, come from, and I don't like to think about it too much, or I'm afraid they'll just disappear. The craft of writing is something else. That's something that can be taught, that I've tried to teach, but what comes from deep down is mysterious.
Of course, and that's inimitable, and we wouldn't want to, no one could have what you have, but there is no one who has ever objected to your poetry. No one has ever criticized it that I have seen or heard or read. And it is because you're exquisitely careful and there's not a lump under the mattress. And I'm asking how that happens. That's process. That's revision. Or are you just a musician?
Oh, revision is what I live by. If I didn't love revision, I wouldn't be able to write poems. That a big mass of words comes from someplace deep down, and then you chisel at it.
But do you do it first margin to margin? Or do you have no, or is it chaotic?
It's chaotic. And then I turn it into a poem. I work on line breaks for hours. I can take a comma in and out for a whole day. And that part I love. That part is fun.
Which not everyone agrees with. I know.
Right. I know Allen Ginsberg once said that you shouldn't revise anything because what comes out first is what's pure. But
that's why Allen Ginsberg is Allen Ginsberg. But you got to purity another way. And let's have another poem. This is the book of the year. It's A Dog Runs Through It.
This is a poem that's really about language as well as about dogs. It's called Dog in the Manger, and I had heard that expression, and it interested me. And then I thought of all the other expressions that people use about dogs. So, Dog in the Manger. As if you'd keep your bones from other dogs when you were done with them. What nonsense. In any case, why manger? That Christmas child slept in the barn with sheep and cows, not dogs. And doggerel? Your bark is so expressive, I think you'd choose a sonnet with beef in it if you could write. Dogfight, I understand. Dog tired, too. You frequent the couch, even wide awake. But raining cats and dogs? And going to the dogs? Where would that be? Why do I care? Language is where I live. Besides, I have a dog in this fight.
Oh, this is really a really important book, I think. Do you see it as an important book?
They're all my children. I don't think
that's
one's
what Howard
better
Nemeroff
than the
said.
other.
We love all of them, each one of them a different way. Right. But it encapsulates so much of your life in such a small way and crystallizes so much of your thoughts and thinking that I think is really a special kind of book for you. Were you writing your memoir or has this been replaced?
I'm not really writing a memoir. Occasionally, I have a little file that has maybe three sentences in it. And I've been enjoying reading memoirs, but I'm not ready yet. When the poems stop coming altogether, then maybe I will. But writing this preface was fun for me.
That's exactly right. That's what I thought of.
Just not having to think about line breaks, the lines just keep going. It was.
Well, there's nothing wrong with your prose. I've read it before. But I thought it was very easily done, very readable, fun. And so maybe this is your memoir.
Maybe.
In fact, Eva Braun, the great philosopher, I always ask her to write her biography. And she says, it's in my books.
Right.
It's in my books. Well, let's go on. Linda Paston's here. And it has been too long a time. Where are we going next, to Insomnia?
Shall I read some poems?
Yes,
from
that won the Towson Literature Prize.
This is the title poem, Insomnia, 3 a.m. Sleep has stepped out for a smoke and may not be back. The sun is waiting in the celestial green room, practicing its flamboyant entrance. In the hour of the wolf, there is only the clock for company ticking through the dark, remorseless stations of the night.
And let's go further for that one, Insomnia.
And this is Consider the Space Between Stars. Consider the white space between words on a page, not just the margins around them. Or the space between thoughts, instants when the mind is inventing exactly what it thinks, and the mouth waits to be filled with language. Consider the space between lovers after a quarrel, the white sheet, a cold metaphor between them. Now picture the brief space before death enters, hat in hand, these vanishing years filled with light.
The vanishing years, do you believe that you are writing in the same way that you did before?
It's interesting. I feel as if the voice in my poems has not changed very much. If one read a poem from my very first book, it has the same...
Voice is the word.
Voice is the word.
Well, I've read all of your books, even one that's not noted, and that was a chapbook from Dryad called Setting the Table.
Yes.
That wasn't your first book, though.
No.
But each, yes, there's no doubt about it.
It's my subjects that have changed because I draw my subjects from what's around me, what I see out the window, what's happening in the house. And as that has changed, my subjects have changed.
I do believe it is a big contribution to have brought domesticity into literature. I think Elizabeth Bishop did it. I think Maxine Cumin did it. I think that women's literature has changed greatly, and partly due to you, that has honored domesticity and made it a genre in writing and is clearly feminist writing.
What has made me so angry over the years is that when a man writes domestic poems, he's praised to the rooftops for doing that. And when a woman does, she's condescended to. And it's still true to some extent.
I don't think that exists yet about women's work, because I believe it's been seen as the most important strand in American literature in the 20th century. I think the most important addition to American literature. And you are a proponent of that and an exemplar of that. So I think you should feel very, very pleased. I believe that was once true in the 50s. But I think it's honored now. And you've done that. You've done that. You've helped that change.
Thank you.
And we'll go on with your own poetry now. Linda Paston at the Library of Congress.
This is a poem really to my husband, who has done all the gardening in our life, and it's called The Gardener. He's out rescuing his fallen hollies after the renegade snowstorm, sawing their wounded limbs off quite mercilessly. I think of the scene in King's Row, the young soldier waking to find his legs gone. He's tying up young bamboo, their delicate tresses litter the driveway, shoveling a door through the snow to free the imprisoned azaleas. I half expect him to tend his trees with aspirin and soup, the gardener who finds in destruction the very reason to carry on, who would look at the ruins of Eden and tell the hovering angel to put down his sword. There was work to be done.
Ira, a marriage of how many years?
65.
But the first 50 are the hardest, don't you think? And then it all falls into place. 65.
Here's a very different kind of garden poem. I write more and more about aging. This is called In the Orchard. Why are these old, gnarled trees so beautiful, while I am merely old and gnarled? If I had leaves, perhaps, or apples, if I had bark instead of this lined skin, maybe the wind would wind itself around my limbs in its old sinuous dance. I shall bite into an apple and swallow the seeds. I shall come back as a tree.
Wonderful. You were at Breadloaf for 20 years, helping to teach, guiding people. It's our eminent Writers Conference in America. And as you watched over those 20 years and nurtured people and guided them, what did you see change? What did you see happen in 20 years? Or do you think things have just been as always?
Things at Breadloaf have changed a lot.
Well, not the structure of the place, but the people in it.
Well, it's become much more democratic, and it used to be very hierarchical. I can't say that word. And much more diverse, and much more emphasis on teaching rather than on listening to lectures and such. But I loved it the way it was. I went to every lecture. And a lot of my students have gone on to publish books and to keep writing me for recommendations after all these years.
Yes, you know, when we give up poetry, we can continue. That's one thing you never stop.
That's right.
Linda Paston is here, and she's going to keep going with her poetry. There is no one in this country that has criticized Linda Paston, and I wonder what you think of that.
Well, I think that's probably not true. I probably know by heart every negative thing ever said in a review. My second book, a reviewer was very upset because I wrote a poem about weaving, and she said that it made her ill to think that women were still writing about things like weaving.
But that wasn't about the way you wrote the poem, because no one has ever criticized the way you write a poem.
Well, actually, the poem about weaving was just a metaphor for art, which she didn't understand, so it was a ridiculous criticism. But no, most criticisms have been about subject matter rather than, particularly early books were seen as too domestic.
I stand by what I say.
For a while. No,
nobody can take apart one of your lines. Let's have one more.
Many of my poems have been about Adam and Eve one way or another, and this was a newer one about a painting by Lewis Cranach the Elder called Adam and Eve by Lewis Cranach, 1526. She seems a mere girl, really, small-breasted and slim, her body luminescent next to Adam, who scratches his head in mild perplexity. So many baubles hang from the tree, it didn't hurt to pick one. The snake is a quicksilver curve on a branch she is almost young enough to swing from. The garden bores her anyway. No weedy chaos among the flowers and vegetables. The animals so tame you can hardly tell the lamb from the lion, the doe from the stag whose antlers outline Adam's modesty. She is like that teenage girl who wandered from the mall last week, not to be seen again. the world before her glittering and perilous.
You know, I would like you to read two final poems, and I'll tell you why. Because everyone I talked to said, don't talk too much, Grace. Let her read the poetry. We want to hear the poetry. So may we have two final poems.
Okay. A short one and a long one. The short one is called Fireflies. Here come the fireflies with their staccato lights, their tiny headlamps blinking in silence through the tall grass, like constellations cut loose from the night sky. See how desire transforms the plainest of us, or flashes of insight that flare for a moment, then flicker out. And finally, this is the last poem in Insomnia. Those of you who know Auden's poems well will see that I sort of change things around using some of his lines. It's called Musings Before Sleep. The lines on my face are starting to make me look like photographs of Auden in old age, as if the lines of my poems could also be as incandescent as his. Would I be willing to look as worn and wrinkled? I avoid mirrors now, particularly when the strong light of morning reveals what I don't wish to see. And sometimes I want to erase the words I'm putting down, even as my pen touches the paper. Sometimes I feel guilty about growing old and forgetful, and sometimes guilty about spending so much time tinkering with language. Though tinkering isn't the word most writers would use, revision, we say, which is sometimes holy, and also something many women do, revise their faces with rouge or stitches. Are there two kinds of vanity, vanity about the beauty we are born with or without, and vanity about the beauty we try to make out of the sticks and stones of language? Old age should be a time of accepting the hand dealt out, in fact, already almost played out. But in these moments when sleep is about to take me, when I might be any age at all, I think again of Auden, who for the length of a dream at least may hold my all-too-human head in the hands that wrote those poems.
I might be any age at all. I hope it doesn't ruin the symmetry, but I need you to read Envoy. I have to have you read the final poem in the back of your book.
Oh, okay. Envoy. We're signing up for heartbreak. We know one day we'll rue it, but oh, the way our life lights up, the years a dog runs through it.
Remember that dearly, because that is the title of the book. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation. Additional support from the Sinipid Fund. Our engineer is Jay Kimlock. I'm Grace Cavalieri.